This is a production of Cornell University.
Okay, good afternoon. It's 4:30. I'd like to call this meeting to order. And we're going to start right off with President Pollack, who's here to speak to us and take questions.
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, normally I come with some updates, and I do have some updates if you'd like them. But I know that there's a lot of interest in telling me what's going on with your work on the code. I got some email this morning from Logan, who I guess is in here, with some questions. So I thought if there's time at the end, I'll do the updates. But since the code is what's on everybody's mind, I would start there. Let me just answer the first of Logan's questions, even though she's not here. So she said to me, can you tell us what you're interested in doing with the code? And so I brought two handouts. The first of these was the original email, and I wrote it on here, that I sent last year to Matthew in September of last year. I brought it and handed it out here in October of last year, and then I sent it again to all the UA and CJC members in April. So I really didn't want to waste people's time. I mean, this already describes what my concerns are. I also brought the cover memo that I had sent to all of the UA and all of the CJC last April, and that includes all the back and forth with Matthew. So, I mean, I can answer specific questions, but to sort of go back again and say what my concerns are seems like a little overkill, since there have been, it's been the same thing multiple times. Sure.
President Pollack, can you talk about what you know regarding a legal requirement for the chosen
I don't know of a legal requirement. I do know that there is concern that there's no legal requirement that I know of that the code be updated. What I know of is real concern that because of its complexity and because of its inconsistency and so on, it leaves us open to legal suits when you know two parts of the code don't agree or a student can't understand them and then something goes on. So there are legal reasons to want to make it clearer, but I don't know if there's no law or anything that says we have to update it, if that's what your question is.
Right, yeah. Okay. Thank you for clarifying.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Can you talk about your perspective or your recommendation to make it a student-only code and the rationale behind it?
Yeah, sure. So our code is an outlier relative to our peers in a number of ways. And one of them is that it combines student and faculty and staff. Most of the issues that pertain to faculty and staff are covered in other documents. Those of us who are faculty and staff are employees, so we are subject to employment policies and employment law. On the other hand, faculty have a lot of extra protections that come from tenure. And so one of the problems with the code is it's very complicated. It pulls together the substantive, the behavioral expectations, and all the process, and the process is different from those. As I say, if you look at almost every other university, I've only looked at the AAU, but I believe this is probably true outside the AAU, what you have is a student code. And the student code says these are the expectations for students, and these are the processes for how you adjudicate them when something goes wrong. And one thing you can do in that case is have the adjudication processes be very educational. We're an educational institution. Now, there is extreme cases. You know, students doing something dangerous, that's a different situation, but we can make it educational. There is a section of the code in the beginning which has to do with freedom of expression. And I understand that there's interest in potentially having a separate document that covers that and has that apply to the entire university. I would completely support that. I think that makes a ton of sense. I think it would let you have a simple student code. It would still preserve the UA's real interest in these freedom of expression matters, which are separate. And I might even consider, I don't know exactly how you would do this, but connecting it to the new Statement of Core Values. Does that help?
That's fantastic. Thank you.
Richard? Logan, did you want to pick in? I mean, you have.
Yeah, I was kind of.
Logan.
Yeah. Oh, Logan, I should say, just to fill you in, I know you asked at the beginning what my thoughts on the code were.
Yeah, I heard.
I brought out.
You also distributed material, so I'll make sure that the CJC gets that.
Yeah, because I had distributed them three times last year, so really going over that again.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's just been like a weird transfer of documents from CJC chair to CJC chair, so this is my first time getting them, so I'll pass them
on. But they're very similar to the things you and I talked about when we met in my
office.
That's
fantastic. So my question then will branch off of Joe's, because at the CJC meeting yesterday, some members talked about maintaining a campus code of conduct, but believing that provisions of the code that pertain particularly to students would be a part of that general document, but it would be addressed that those areas might not be pertinent to faculty and employees, for example. So maintaining an entire,
what I think we need is a simple, clear document that students can understand. The students have asked me for this, the faculty, the board, a simple, clear document that says, this is what students, the behavior we expect, and this is the process we have for dealing with that. If there are other issues, like the freedom of expression stuff, I mean, personally, I think it's a lot cleaner to have that in a separate document, whether you have one document with a section that's for students and, but we need something that's clear and people can understand.
Richard?
I think that's consistent with what we were looking at on the committee. That what's really important, I think, for some members of the committee, is that the campus code of conduct be an expression, a formal expression, of those core values that apply to everybody. So that, and then those parts that apply to specific, like to students, to specific constituencies, they'd be somewhere else. But still, there are some things, there are some principles of conduct, behavior, of ethics, and so forth, that all members of the community should subscribe to.
I think we're in the same place. And that's separate. I mean, what gets so tangled up in the current code is all the adjudication stuff. I mean, faculty have different rights. Staff have different policies. But a statement, I mean, if you wanted to take... Again, you do it how it makes sense, but I'm saying if you wanted to take the core value statement and then fold that in or somehow attach that to this broader statement of ethics and say, okay, this is what we expect of all campus citizens, that's fine. But the specific stuff, you can't carry a gun, you can't do drugs, blah, 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 and this is that's what sits in every other campus in this country in a student code. They're not big principles, right? They're specific.
So one example is, and you've already mentioned it in some ways, so freedom of speech and its enforcement. That applies to everybody.
Of course.
It's across the board.
That's what I said to Joe and Christopher.
Yeah.
So. I'd be perfectly fine with one document that says these are our campus-wide expectations, and then a very detailed, almost like a student handbook, but it's not a handbook.
So let me just, I'm preempting what Logan's probably going to say. So one of the things that in the committee we wanted to do was to work on this on the student portion of this of the code and get that done first.
Good.
And then move on to the bigger issues.
I'm fine with that.
Because that completely answers. I mean, our main concern yesterday, we were just talking about if there was the possibility of maintaining the one document but separating out the student code.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think it's cleaner to have two documents, but and also you can get RADWA up, and then it's easier to change one. I mean, whether we staple them together or have them separate, I'm just talking about for simplicity.
Yeah, and that completely answers us, because we just wanted to make sure that the same rights, values, and aspirations and those statements are awarded across the community.
Absolutely.
My question, actually, I was going to move on to a different one.
Okay, but I think Charlie might have
different. Okay. Yeah, I looked at the most recent JA report the other day, and there are two math facts in there that I think really argue pretty strongly for student-only.
Oh, yeah.
So there are 23,000 students and 800 cases came to JA's way. There are 10,000 employees and faculty, and four came to JA's way. So that's a ratio of about 200 to 1. And the question is, are we talking about sort of tail? Do we want to complicate things because of that half of a percent? I don't think you do. And then if you look at the stats for freshmen, sophomores, juniors, and so on, there are twice as many freshman infractions as sophomore infractions, twice as many sophomore infractions as junior infractions. What this says to me is there's a real education problem coming here. Maybe you pick up the vibes after you've been here a few years, but we want something when you show up here that communicates things. Now, I know stats don't tell the whole story, but I'm just sort of saying, in a quiet sort of way,
no, that's important.
Tell me something.
That, I think that I didn't mean to mention that as important. And I think four is a high number. I think the year before there were two. So it's it's a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of cases for faculty and staff that get handled under the code.
I know the answer to this, but I think for everyone else to hear about the answer to this. The move of the JA to under the Dean of Students, I'm going to be very blunt. I don't think there's any issue in that. I don't think any rights of students would be, like, shirking that responsibility. I just offer the question and offer it.
Why would I? Okay,
yeah.
So let me speak to that. I would very, very much support the move of the JA under the Office of Student Life for a number of reasons. First of all, this is a very professional position. And currently it reports to a committee, which with all due respect, as Logan mentioned, it changes all the time. We're not going to get a strong pool of people who want this position when their boss is a committee that changes, the chair changes. That's number one. Number two, it's a very professional position, and that means they need a career path.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
here they're off isolated. These are student life people, right?
Yeah.
For the most part, these are student life people, and they need colleagues. We are the outlier. There are only, as far as I know, two out of 62 AAU schools that don't have a report to student life, and none of them have it sitting on their own. And I also think when you think about the model, this goes back to this issue of, I think it was Chris Rice talking about being educational. Right now we're in this funny business, we're a university, and we're investing in basically a prosecutor, right? That's not what the JA should be doing. These are students. There are extreme, really extreme cases, but by and large, the JA should be doing the intake, should be conducting sort of a neutral, very fair analysis of the case, and then should be handing it over in cases where it can't be informally, with the expertise of student life resolved, handing it over for a process that is as fair and respectful as possible. But right now it's this funny prosecutorial mode, which I don't think serves us well, and I don't the university, and I don't think it serves students well. I think. Hi, how are you?
I'm wondering. Let's say the faculty has a handbook and standards outlined by the handbook and certain codes of behavior in departmental relations and on the campus.
Can you speak up just a little? It's hard to hear.
Sure. But my question is, what would happen to staff and employees in general? What kind of code would one write for them? Right now this covers.
Yeah, but I think Charlie's point is a relevant one. Right now, the overwhelming majority of cases.
No, I understand that. But is it possible that we could just not have codes for faculty and staff? That's fine with me.
You mean as a campus code? So we certainly have policies and procedures. We have a
how about a code?
Well, again, I'm perfectly comfortable with, and in fact would be supportive of, if this body wants to take the piece of the code, and I think Richard puts it really well, it's the general principles. It's not the low-level details that really, that's what goes to the employee relations and the employee law and the faculty, but the principles of behavior, which in the code are mostly the stuff in the beginning about freedom of expression, and built a code, a document around that, I think that makes a ton of sense. If you don't want to have that, that's your call, but I would be supportive of that.
That's very consistent with where the CJC is going right now. Just to
what you want to do with it is fine. I think it'd be cleaner to have two separate documents.
And I'll have that along.
To go, and it goes partly to Charlie's point. Then you're handing to a freshman, like the first thing they're going to look at are the real simple. Here's what you don't do.
I want to follow up on my question only because it's been puzzling me as we've gone through the past to the existing cases that I've been with. That is, let's say, you know, there are no cases and stuff, that's wonderful, at least there are four cases and three cases in practice. What do you do with a harassment, let's say, a perception of harassment by a staff member?
Well, so
of a student. Or
perception
of harassment by a
That's handled by 6.4. That's already handled. We deal with harassment cases all the time already, and we have to handle. You know, there's where the legal issues come in. There we have to handle those. We can't hand those off to a JA. Those are all very serious legal issues.
Yeah.
Have to be handled. That's why we have. That's why we have a Title IX office to handle harassment.
But it's in the code. You're saying.
Harassment is handled in the Title IX office.
Right.
And that's where it should. That's where it must be handled, legally.
Richard or Logan? I'm not quite sure who's next. You both had your hands up.
Logan has precedence.
Let me go for it.
You're the chair.
I'm taking notes right now.
So, one of the concerns is reducing the student code just to the Office of Judicial Administrator and making it one of the concerns we had in looking at the council draft is that, you know, there it sounds kind of punitive, and so we wanted to change some of that tone.
And that's fine, because as you heard me say, the goal is not to be punitive.
No, this is not a criticism or anything.
Yeah, I'm saying I'm agreeing with you. Yeah. If it sounds punitive, that's not a good
thing. No, they're lawyers, right? Not yet for lawyers.
That's right, they get them in one L and they're never the same.
She's earning it today. But the other one, Martha, and this is really important, I think. I understand the argument about recruitment, because I was on the OGA recruitment committee, and the applications we got, they were weak,
mm-hmm.
And they were problematic in a lot of ways, which is the reason why we recommended
mm-hmm.
retention. But one of the things about shared governance is that the OJA's office, as it's structured now, is suspended between the UA and the central administration. And that has always been a very important part of shared governance at Cornell. And that we need to spend a lot of time thinking about, reconciling what I think is a real concern that you voiced, but also a real concern about shared governance on the other side.
I mean, look, Richard, I try very hard to respect shared governance, and so does the board. You saw that with the way they handled the student trustee election. The problem, the way you described it, is what I take to be exactly the problem. It dangles in no man's land. It's accountable to no one. It doesn't have, when we're dealing with issues, you know, the kinds of issues, when Charlie talks about all these freshman issues, a lot of them are around things that stem from alcohol abuse. I mean, we have a whole bunch of people over in student life who know how to deal with alcohol abuse, or not know how, but nobody really knows how, but has, you know, some methods. And the office right now is just dangling in Never Never Land. And I look around the country, and I see many universities where there's very strong shared governance, and the JA reports into student life, it's not like you guys are making the decisions on what the JA does, just like I'm not.
If I may, this, because it's important, let me follow up on it. One of the things about Cornell is that it's unique in the way in which shared governance has been, all institutions are like that. And to conform to someone else's model, even a best practices model, I don't find very appealing, convincing. I think you're right that I think there have been problems in the OJA's office that certainly I've become aware of. And there were problems in the way that we did oversight. And there are ways to collaborate without.
Yeah. So
designing
designing it in such a way that there's collaboration rather than just giving it up. I think that's a really important thing.
I think we may just have to agree to disagree here, but I do want to clarify one thing. I'm not arguing that we should do it because other universities do it. Mm-hmm. I'm arguing that we should do it because I don't think we can treat it as the kind of professional position it is when the person is isolated like that. I think that we don't get the kind of professional people we want. I think they're unable to put in place best practices around student conduct and student behavior. I think, as I said, we're in this mode of it being prosecutorial as opposed to being in an environment of educational. And my point about the other universities is, with all those reasons in place, I look around and I see, oh, it works everywhere else without people at other universities thinking, oh my God, I don't participate in shared governance. So it's not that I think we should do it because of that. I think we should do it because of all the other reasons. And then, by the way, look, it works everywhere else, or virtually everywhere else except for here. So I think we might have to just agree to disagree.
But you'd be willing to collaborate with the committee in the UA on designing collaboration, and then we see at the end of the day whether you might do it or not.
I'm looking, look, I'm not sure what you're asking, yeah, Logan.
I think that I have hopefully I'm going sort of where you're going. So in a hypothetical world where the CJC, the UA, and you all recommend that the JA's office is moved into under a new umbrella. Yeah, I'm sorry, I keep forgetting.
SCL, Student and Campus Life.
Would you be able to talk to me about how you envision the search process going, moving forward for the JA?
I'd be perfectly happy to have the UA heavily involved in the
search
process.
Yeah, that...
I mean, not totally seat it, right? Yes, just like we never have in the past. But
to make sure that faculty, staff, students, graduate
students...
Okay.
Absolutely. I think that would be critical. Yeah, Christopher.
President Bach, do you have a deadline that you would like to see the UA achieve the delivery of?
Yes, she does.
You saw this. Okay, let me tell you where I am. I'm going to be completely straight with you guys. I got here 2.5 years ago, and discontent with the code was one of the first things I've heard. Heard it from 2.5 years, primarily from the undergraduates, from lots of people, but primarily, and Joe's right, primarily from the undergraduates. I also heard discontent from the board, because they hear it from the undergraduates, and our board really does care about our students, and B, because they are worried about the legal gaps, the fact that right now there's holes and things and people could sue us. And I have said to the board multiple times, this is the responsibility of the UA and the CJC. We need to leave it to them. It was my first year. I didn't pay that much attention. Last year, happened again. The former chair came to the board last March and told the board we were almost done. Yeah. And then you all know what happened there. This year, I said to the board, look, I get it. They had a chair. For whatever reason, the chair didn't carry it out. I'll give them one more chance. But I'm telling you, look, I don't have the authority. I don't have the authority to change the code you do, but the board does too. And if we don't have something by the end of the year, if we're not even showing progress by mid-year, I'm not trying to shirk responsibility. It's not going to be me. It's going to be the board who's going to come in and say, take this over.
Yes, I think you're going to be very happy with the progress that the CJC is making.
That would be wonderful.
And it's been an entirely different world than last year.
Terrific.
My question, I guess, is more specific to deadlines, because obviously community engagement is going to be really important to us, and we don't want to rush out a document that's going to affect people for an extended period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So if there are, you know, 1, 2, or 3 things that are imperative that go before board before December, would you be open to us amending the current one while we continue?
I wouldn't spend time amending the current one. I would not spend time on that. To me, it's like I used to, you know, I'm a computer science professor, and I would get students in, Charlie, who I don't know who else in here is, who will relate to this. So I teach introductory program. And they'd come in with the program they'd written. And it was a total mess, mess. But they'd work so hard on it. Writing professors can relate this too. And they'd say, well, I'll change this line. Where what they really needed to do was scrap it. I wouldn't spend any time on it. If you have a draft of the student, if you have a draft of the behavioral section,
okay,
not even the procedural section,
which
and you can
have.
Begin to socialize that, and I can take that in the board. But the deadline, I mean, they didn't tell me this is a deadline. I'm telling you from working them for, if I can't go to them by the May meeting with a new version that's been approved. It's been 3 years, guys. Yeah. I can't keep saying to them, give the community another year.
Yeah, so I can assure you that the first portion will be done by December, and we are working.
And look, it's September now. Just figure out when you have to be, work backwards when you have to do communication.
It's October.
Touche. It's barely October. Hi, Ellis.
I've been through two big major rewrites of the code since I've been associated with UA since like 1980.
So that's 40 years.
Is rewriting it going to make it so that suddenly a freshman says, oh, you mean I'm not supposed to drink here? Oh, gee, I didn't know that. Gee, I'm sure glad that I just read that.
I just disagree. I will say this for the record. I cannot understand the code. I have a PhD in computer science, and I've worked in administration for decades. I cannot understand the current code. I read the code at MIT, or the code at Penn, or the code at Brown, or the code at Virginia, because I looked at them, and I can understand them. This has the titles, and the acts, and the wherefores, and the wherewiths, and it can be much, much, much simpler. Much simpler. And it can be consistent. You know, last year or 2 years ago, when we were trying to do the JA renewal, the two paragraphs weren't even consistent with each other. I had to come to the UA and say, can you give me permission to do this? Because it's not even consistent. You cannot hand an 18-year-old a document like that. Now, are they going to still drink? Of course they're going to still drink. But when they still drink, we can point clearly to what they're supposed to have done and how we're going to handle it.
It was really in the context of the numbers that Charlie spit out and whether any rewrite of the code,
But look, it's a little bit like it's a little bit like speed limits, right? We have speed limits. We know that people will speed, but when they speed, we have a pretty clear baseline. That said 55. You can read 55. Okay, now we're going to work through. Right now, it's not consistent. It's complicated. And really, take a look at the codes at some other places, particularly the behavioral expectations.
Mm-hmm.
They're just so much clearer.
I must admit that I only looked at one.
Right, I have to go in about 2 minutes.
Chris.
So we have really great faculty, students, graduate students, and employees that are really interested in doing the best possible job of the code. People who've been here
good.
A long time have seen it grow and come and they think about how to make this fit for everybody as well as address all the issues and possibly the whole university. The reason I asked about the deadline is it comes up and as soon as we start talking about the student-specific code, the Greek judicial system, which to me is something that personally I learned for the very first time last year in assemblies, and it was like, wow. So I think if we were trying to meet a deadline, incorporating that aspect of it would be...
I think that's totally fair. And so if you want my practical advice, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Mm-hmm. Leave the Greek judicial system alone for now. Mm-hmm. Get the rest of this done. And then next year, come back and worry about the Greek judicial system. You do what you want, but that would be my advice. And I could totally sell that to the board. They understand that.
That's very clear. Thank you.
Thank you all. I really appreciate the work on this.
So thank you for coming.
That's one of my favorite lines, by the way. Don't let the perfect be the enemy.
Thank you.
Do you want to do attendance?
Yeah, if we could do a roll call for attendance. Yes, thank you. Is that the roll call? Okay, go ahead.
Amani Allen. Joseph Anderson.
Here.
Andy Barrientos Gomez.
Out.
Christopher Clark.
Here.
Richard Bensel.
Here.
James Bogdanowicz.
Here.
Masa Haddad.
Here.
Xiang Wen-Chin. Martin Hatch.
Here.
David Heiner.
Here.
Robert Howard.
Here.
Adam Howell. Logan Kenny.
Present.
Shane Lobo.
He's not on the DOA anymore.
Alice Lowe.
Here.
Gavin Martin.
Here.
Ronell Mensah.
She's
he's not here. Jeff E.
Here.
Pilar Thompson.
Here.
And Charles Van Loon.
Here.
Okay, thank you. Next on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from September 3rd. People looked at them, have they? We've asked that you look beforehand. Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Any opposition?
So
Logan?
I have full opposition. I was about to motion to table. In the last meeting, Charlie and I had a back and forth about having the CJC working drafts public, and that's completely omitted from the minutes, so I wanted to recommend that we go back and just explore what that conversation was, because I pretty strongly remember opposing having anything public, and I don't see it anywhere.
Is that not on our executive meeting?
It was in both meetings.
Okay, all right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Other discussion? Well,
is there some way of checking to see whether that's not?
Can we table and have the LA look into it?
Into the minutes, yeah.
Chris would have to withdraw his motion.
I will withdraw the motion.
All right, we will.
So then I would like to move to a table and look into that further, please.
Sorry.
Okay, other discussion? All those in favor of tabling? Opposed? Abstained? Motion passes. The call for late additions to the agenda. Are there any?
Mm-hmm.
No late additions? All right. Then the next agenda item is to go back to a discussion of the code, which we started with Martha, but now without her. And there are a series of topics here, which we've listed just to sort of focus the discussion. Let me just preface it by saying that I feel it's important that let me start by saying I really appreciate the level of time and dedication that the CJC and the
mm-hmm.
members have put into it so
mm-hmm.
far. I think that's really critical. I also think it's critical that the UA be engaged in the process solidly going along and not simply responding to what comes from the CJC. I think that's critical if we're going to avoid the problems of the last 3 years. And so it's in that context that I wanted to have a discussion of some of the larger topics to help inform the detailed input that the CJC will have. So that's the purpose for having this on the agenda. And with that, I will. We can go through these one by one, or we can have Ellis.
Just talking with Martin, maybe I missed it. What isn't working in the code right now? What specifically isn't working?
Well, let me give you a.
You're going through the code, you're obviously going through the JA. Maybe you're the one to answer what isn't working.
Let me give Joe a chance to answer it, and then I also have an answer if he doesn't say it.
The UA and the committee has had to address specific deficiencies in the code that arose because somebody did something that presumably wasn't covered by some statute, and there had to be modifications to the code, and that always carries up, you know, was there something hidden somewhere that was now in conflict with that. But specifically, you're going to change the code. Forget about the thing at the very beginning. What is there something that specifically isn't working that needs to be changed directly?
Before I turn over to Joe, let me preface it by saying that the University Assembly has consistently for 24 months promised the trustees and the president that we were redoing the code. And so it's an awkward time to say, oh, we didn't mean it, and we're not going to.
We are. I just don't know what they are. I wouldn't say that we shouldn't.
Yeah, okay.
Only that I'm not sure what it is that we're supposed to be voting at.
Thank you. I can address this in both a high-level context of culture on campus, but also in, like, some specifics around the adjudication process. high-level context, students, specifically undergraduate students, don't find the campus code of conduct something that is there to protect them, something that is there to keep them safe at the university, and something that actually serves as a document that influences decisions that they make in a context, especially in the first-year context. So fundamentally, they don't believe that this system is there for that, for their protection. They believe it is there to antagonize them. And fundamentally, that's not what we want in a campus judicial system. In fact, we want this to be an educational system in which behaviors that are negative, like harassment, we want to unlearn those so that when undergraduates graduate, they don't continue harassing others or continue, you know, hazing people in different contexts throughout their life. That's not happening right now in the judicial process because we're not equipping the OJA, and students don't see that. Students don't see the OJA as a developmental opportunity. And so that's why I think a lot of what President Pollack recommended of moving it to SEL would do that. I think also just specifics, you look at the definition of harassment from the current one we have, it's not at all consistent with our university definition of harassment. Now, the edits are, and that's what we have to get to, we have to harmonize the definition of harassment with Title IX. There are a lot of the specific stuff that were proposed last year, never voted on. And I think that's a huge thing, really fundamentally, from an undergraduate perspective. We're not protecting our students, we're not allowing them, and, you know, I was here two and a half years ago, as many of us were, when, like, about 400, 500 black students came to the UA meeting and said, this doesn't work for us, and it's never worked for us, and so fundamentally, we've never made that change. And so through this process of a student-only code and moving to SEL, I think then those students will feel protected, and feel like they can truly be a member of the Cornell community rather than being, you know, marginalized as we've consistently done it since I've been here.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that we shouldn't separate out and have student codes. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It was simply a question of, you know, looking at what parts of the code, you just throw the entire thing out and start from scratch. Because most of what we've done in the past has dealt with first defining what's bad and then trying to harmonize, you know, how long do you have? What if there's a vacation in the way and you only have 20 days? Those were very specific arguments, but a lot of time talking about time and things like that. Is your plan to rehash all of that?
Let me interject that it's been a long time since the UA has done a solid review formally of the issues with the code. I, in conversations with the University Counsel's office, was informed of all sorts of what I would consider travesties with how it's being used at the moment, quite frankly. We as an assembly aren't given that information. We don't have a procedure whereby it comes to us. In fact, there are procedures whereby it cannot come to us because of confidentiality that's written into the current code and system. And that alone, to me, is a reason to rethink it. Logan.
Yeah, and I just wanted to speak more to, like, the specifics. The plan is that we're currently working off of a draft that we got from the University Counsel's office. But that is also being read alongside the current code as it stands. And so we're not destroying the previous code and creating something from scratch, but we are trying to unify in the way that you were saying. And then just to add one more, like, practicality point, it currently reads as a legal document, and as a law student, like, I know it's incredibly difficult to read legal documents, so I can only imagine being a freshman and having that language. So I think a lot of it is just readability and just making sure that people understand their rights, they also understand what they cannot do and what will happen if they do those actions. But it's like a cleanup for readability and to ensure that people are safe and have their rights.
I thought that was going to be the judicial post counselors. So that, you know, I mean, I can't read civil law. That's why I go to an attorney. That's why I thought. If you were, again, I'm not saying don't get me wrong. Yeah, I'm not really coming down to you. But I thought that was the reason why if a student did something wrong, went before the date, there was somebody they could talk to explain to them what their rights and their possible consequences were, and not the expectation that they were going to read every little thing about the date unless they wanted to. I'm worried that an oversimplification, where we might miss things, but that's why we're all going to be looking at it, right?
Well, I'll look at it. Let me just, before I get to Gavin, let me just step back a little bit and comment on the record on the involvement in the counsel's office, because I sent you all an email earlier today explaining the role. As of last April at the University Assembly meeting, we did not have a quorum, but there's a lot of heated discussion, and there's a strong consensus by everyone who was there that we really had botched up the process over the last year and we needed to do something else and that we should ask Day Hall for help. It's my understanding that my predecessor was supposed to do that and ask for help. He did not. And then shortly after that, I was actually contacted by the president, who had to go to the trustees and wanted to know what was going on, since she had not been told what was going on. And we, the UA, had promised the trustees in March that they'd get it in May, which they didn't. Mm-hmm. So I, at that point, engaged Logan and the university council, and the president and I met with Logan on the phone, and I formally, at that point, asked for and received a promise of help from President Pollack and from the university council's office. And they worked on it over the summer. They behind schedule somewhat because the university had all sorts of legal hassles in the mm-hmm. summer, which mm-hmm. slowed them down. But they provided something. There was a clear understanding from the start. I made it clear. The president agreed. Logan also made it clear that we are not bound by what they produce. It is designed to help us. We can take as much or as little of it as we'd like. The procedural parts of it were not there then. I got back to the university council after our last university assembly meeting and after our last executive board meeting and asked them to produce the rest of it and the procedural stuff. She asked for specific guidance, and I said I wasn't in a position to give it at that point because we hadn't, through the UA, come up with it, so she should use her best judgment. They've done that, and as you've seen, they say, be providing the rest of it to us tomorrow or Thursday, and as soon as I get it, I will share it with you all because I and they consider that a public document. But it's not binding on us. It's helpful guidance, and we should use it as we think appropriate. Gavin.
Yeah, just going to your point on readability, I think accessibility is important. So before you even get a JAA, or before you commit any sort of like negligence towards this campus or actors on this campus, you should know that what you're doing is wrong. And the other part of this is that as students, we are expected to know what is wrong. Before we come here, I think that they're doing it now where they give us a booklet of like the campus code of conduct. We are expected to know. And part of that is if you are expected to read it, if you are expected to read it, you should be able to read it. But I think that's where the issue comes into.
Others wish to speak? Richard.
Just to underline, I mean, I think your point about the council's draft, we found it very useful. We have disagreements with it or, mm-hmm. or questions about it and corrections and amending it and so forth. But we're very thankful that we have it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's much better to work that way than mm-hmm. to work with the existing code. It's try to anticipate what it is the administration would.
Mm-hmm.
So that part's good. And just underline, you said, I mean, it doesn't obligate us to do what they say.
No.
But it is very useful as a template to work on. You know, they're to be praised for doing that. It's
Thank you for that. I should add that the university council did not want to give it to us in August because they'd fallen behind in the summer and they felt it was too rough to share. And I literally pried it out of their fingers because I thought it was important for us to move on.
Yep.
Yes?
I think of Logan, I
want to
say hi to Logan
after
readability. I've seen the former president's qualifier. Sometimes. Or how their violation falls. And so I think on some level to be able to understand that from the time that they see a document, granted they may need some clarification or understanding, but I found that there is from the point A to, you know, the next point, there becomes this level of anxiety. And sometimes that has, even though the student may be responsible for something, it's still a level of anxiety and not being able to understand at a time to be able to kind of seek clarification and understand kind of what's going to happen next. And sometimes that's also kind of a little harmful rather than helpful.
no disagreement on any of this.
Mm-mm. Just to clarify, has this moved the JA into the Dean of Students? Is that already done?
No.
Okay.
No.
I mean, I've always valued it as being completely independent of administration.
The
I would be uncomfortable if the Ombudsman's Office was next to HR, you know, and under HR's thumb. I like the idea that Charter's office is completely independent in that regard as an ombudsman. I would just find having to go into Day Hall for anything as a student to be intimidated. I don't like the way Day Hall
is Willard Street.
It's Willard Street.
Yeah.
Willard Street, sorry.
Yeah. Let me respond to that. Dean of Students, I share some of that. It's up to us to recommend or not. That's their recommendation. Currently, the JA reports to us, and who us is exactly, and how we do that, you know, as chair, they come and talk to us once a year, and that's it, and then they get reappointed or not. And so they're not really accountable to anyone except in the reappointment process, which is awkward. That has not worked well, quite frankly. And there's very little accountability when there are problems. We don't even hear about it because the code doesn't let people who have issues associated with that talk even to me.
Well, as you just pointed out, code, people like Barbara Krauss came to almost every meeting and reported what was going on. So part of that may have to do with a particular JA.
Oh.
But we had JAs that took a real, real active part of what the UA was doing. Recognize that we basically were a team with the JA.
Sure.
Joe?
Marty.
Oh, Marty.
Yeah, I'm interested in knowing what the UA thinks about future administration of a code that is. It's not yet clear to me how it will work, even though I'm at the meeting. But is basically designed to help students, to work with students, Is there a reason why the UA should be the home for it? Do we want to contemplate when JA moves into the student affairs office, when the dean of students office, when the code becomes mostly a guidance for students, that it should actually be administered by the student assembly. And I'm serious about that. And I think the UA ought to think about it, because why should we think about the document as being comprehensive for the whole community, as a community document, if it's really the push for it to be different from what it is, significantly different, is coming because it's postulated that it's not understood well by students. And it's a serious question. It's not a rhetorical question. If we made this, and of course we're in the process of making, I'm still not clear to me, like as with Ellis, what the problem is with readability. I was just reading the code and thinking, gosh, this is pretty clear. But never mind. if we decide that it's to make it a simple, plain English, is I think the terms that the president used, so that students can read it. We really ought to contemplate, and I think contemplating now, because we've got a lot of work ahead of us in the post-discipline, saying part of this is that it should be administered by the student assembly. Thank you.
Joe.
Yeah, I mean, this is my third year on the UA, and I just finally have been able to fully understand the code, and I think as it stands now, we, as a student assembly, we try our best to get students involved in the code change processes, and I mean, the undergraduate delegation has changed so much in my 3 years and the diversity that we now represent that these perspectives are coming up. And as it gets simplified, I think we can take on that responsibility. If it's a student-only code, and that can be undergraduates, graduates, and professional students. And we've had committees like that in the past that have done this work, where there's collaboration amongst all students, whether it be regarding financial aid policies, distributing money. We've done that before. And if that's a possibility the UA would like to see, I think, then, you know, obviously I'll be gone next year, but I think there is a possibility in that. I think there is a possibility in having the students own our student experience and our student judicial system, and through the aid of what would become the new student conduct office under the Dean of Students, through a true collaboration process, because then we get culturally a buy-in to the judicial process, where we can actually teach students, and students feel comfortable saying the situations that happen to them and telling the experiences that might be negative about the university.
What's the rest of you, Ed?
Chris.
So, Martin, I think you bring up a very interesting question with the idea that if we split this apart, does everybody get their own part and have to relegate that because of the issues that affect people is something. Why I would pin that is that we have a deadline, we have a deliverable of executing an updated student code by May, if not by December. And while I think your idea and what Joe commented on is something that, as you know, the next session or the next group, or the next, once this is done, figuring out who gets to own what is a thing. And what I would say about why the UA should continue to own it is, and it surprises me because I'm thinking a little bit like Richard in my mind, is that we have excellence in this room, representatives from all the different good parts of Cornell. Cornell means something different to each and every one of us. Our experiences, how we interact between faculty and students, students and staff. We have the best chance at looking at something that if a student wrote it and said, hey, this is the way that I think this should be, the sage professors would say, I've been around long enough that you think you want that, but that's really not what you want. And the employees as well having experience of saying, hey, this is how this works. And in the employee world, here's an example of something that already that we do to address this kind of an issue and sharing that knowledge and moving it over. If it moves straight to the students only, their focus becomes narrower. They might be able to immediately react and make it changes proactively with their specifics. But sort of what Richard, I think, was talking about with the overall campus code and the culture thing is we, as this assembly, have the best group to inform about the total culture of Cornell. Where if we did decide to just shift it in the parts, it would probably be lesser than what we can all do together.
Let me suggest, because I do want to adjourn the meeting at 6. It's my wife's birthday, and I'm taking her out to dinner, so I'm serious about that. And we have other things later in the agenda. We have about 5 minutes left to this discussion, and I'd like to make sure that we at least briefly consider the other topics which are here. One is just the mechanism for giving the CJC feedback on your drafts, and we can, I don't know what that is, but you guys can think about that. And Richard had mentioned when President Pollack was here this thought that we should have the, you know, some basic statement of free speech, et cetera, that covers all of us, and that goes to bullet 3 here, the thought that we have some campus code of rights and privileges, it's called here, with a student code under. So I'd like to get sort of a brief sense of whether people think that's a good idea or not in terms of informing the CJC.
I have a question about that section. So I was wondering, I've read over it twice, and I was just wondering where free speech ends and hate speech picks up, and what that looks like on campus applied to like faculty and students. Like, what you wrote?
So you're talking about my draft?
Yeah.
My draft.
Yeah.
I probably read. Need my draft in front to address that correctly. I think it takes and talks about speech, permissible and impermissible speech. And when you talk about hate speech and harassment and so forth and so on, that's going to bring probably somewhere else in the code rather than in that part. Because you want the free speech part. What's intended in my draft is to take all the members of the campus community and place them in equality with one another with reference to people's talk, to make it as free as possible without abusive, you know, portions to it, or intents to it, or effects to it. The harassment and other kinds of sections, that's probably where there's the thing, hate speech and so forth, is going to come in. It certainly is anticipated in my draft, but my draft can't be that long. It's meant to be the first, kind of too long anyway. You know, it's something like 1,000 words or something. It's a, you know, and it probably would have to be cut. But when it does, well, we need it in front of us to really go through it. But it talks about venues, so classrooms. It talks about formal speech. It talks about informal areas like libraries and living spaces and open spaces. And there are different kinds of relationships, different kinds of speech are permitted or not permitted in those different kinds of spaces. And what is interesting about, well, I
think it's critical that you go on and on, but not necessarily at the moment. So we need to structure time to have that debate, because your question is critically important and the answer is important, the details of how we do it. But what I'd like at the moment is a sense from this group as to whether or not we should have the, such a statement that applies beyond students to all of us. Personally, I think we should. But I think we as a group need to give guidance to the CJC on that. And then they and you can work out the details of that and bring back to us to discuss maybe for an hour on that topic.
I don't think, you got to be careful here, though, Bob. The CJC has jurisdiction over this. So, you know,
I disagree.
Yeah, well, there's the bylaws. So
I disagree with your interpretation of the bylaws.
Well, it's the CJC is going to insist on it. The UA certainly can advise and so forth, in the process of revising the code. It cannot preempt what that draft is. The draft comes here.
I'm asking that the UA give guidance to the CJC, which is a committee of the administrator, and I disagree with your interpretation of the bylaws, which we can discuss later in the agenda as it comes up.
It is a...
I strongly disagree.
Logan can do this, but we're speaking for the committee when we say this. You know, we're not.
Well, then we won't give you guidance because we're out of time. No, we're out of time. I'm serious about moving on for 6. It is 25 after. I disagree with your interpretation, but we'll go to the committee reports where it will come up. So the executive cabinet, Pilar, you want to?
So the executive cabinet, hopefully everyone's been checking the box and have been able to see, we did let you all know that we were not going to be submitting minutes, because we are not taking minutes of the executive sessions that we have, but we did upload and have a, I guess you could say, what did you call it here? You called it executive meeting minutes, no, executive board notes. And at that meeting that we had September 10th, we met between 4:30 and 5:30, which you would have seen. Everyone was present. No one was missing from that meeting. We looked at the priorities discussed by all four committees that we had, obviously with a clear and focused discussion on the revision of the code, as Logan mentioned as well, from some of the things that were missing in the meetings, minutes from the RUA one. There was some clear discussions with Charlie as well as Bob and the rest of us, whether or not the draft from legal counsel should be uploaded, and we did proceed to say as a whole that it should be open to discussion as it's not a private and confidential document. Then we also proceeded to just further discuss with David the tobacco, and that was pretty much our general summary of it. As I say, we are not taking minutes, but we are being very clear about agenda topics as well as general summaries.
Thank you. Comments, questions? Okay, Codes and Judicial Committee.
I'd like a motion that we go into executive summary for this part.
Section.
Yes. I don't think you could. I mean, we would have to come out to vote.
Yeah.
That's the only thing.
We can go into executive session. I think it has to be seconded, and I think you need to state a reason.
Concerns about discussing the resolutions as they are written before. I'd rather talk about them in an executive session before we introduce them to the main body of the assembly.
Okay. Marty, you seconded that?
I did.
Okay. All those in favor of executive session? Opposed? Okay, the motion does not carry. No executive session. Logan, the floor is yours.
Yeah, so you all received my update. So just really briefly, the committee voted to work off of the U-Council draft. We're using it kind of as a template and working in from the previous code from the past draft from last year, but not so much on that. And we also will be filling vacancy positions to the university hearing and review boards. We just received information. There are 5 members that are needing to be appointed. So today I'm going to figure out how exactly we can go about that in the most efficient way so that we can continue on with our code efforts. And we are still missing a graduate student to serve on the committee, so we're filled outside of that one person. And then outside of that, I suppose I think the next item under me is to talk about the resolution.
Mm-hmm.
So I can go one by one or present them both, whichever one is...
It's up to you, but I would think one by one is easier.
Okay. So the first resolution was drafted by myself and passed by the entire CJC. And it is really just a statement reinforcing that based on the bylaws, we do not believe that the University Council or the CJC working draft should have been open to public comment. If we look at... Does anyone have the bylaws?
I have them in front of me, yes.
Yeah. So under subsection 333, for example, for committees, understanding committees. Actually, I'll go for 331. So, issuing a public notice on the Assembly's website of each motion related to a substantive policy change. That would then also include contact information, period of time which it's open, public comments, times and locations of public hearings. Also being able to extend time when written comments are accepted. That's all information in which the CJC, well, not information, but direction that the CJC would vote on in order to how we felt best serve the community and whether it was the 2-week period necessary under the bylaws or if we wanted to extend that. And as we've been delegated by the Assembly to work on the motions related to the Code of Conduct, it is our responsibility to approve those resolutions for consideration before they're advanced to the Assembly for vote and debate. And we also believe that it's within our jurisdiction under the bylaws not to have public comment ahead of time without consultation with the CJC. We also disagree with the fact that the UA didn't take a vote for the release of the drafts and that both of the drafts were up and currently is standing. I'm not positive, but I think it is just the University Council draft. So this is just a statement saying that we strongly disagree and believe that wherever those drafts are that the CJC are currently working on, whether they're public anywhere else, need to be removed, because when we give you our work product, that is when the UA has it, and we have the authority under the bylaws.
I disagree, but it depends on how one reads the bylaws. The bylaws refer to the fact that once a motion is referred to you.
Your primary role is to facilitate.
Have you read Robert's Rules of Orders?
I have, and you're cutting people off, and if this is a point for discussion, I would like to hear from the University Assembly and not have it be addressed to you.
As chair, I will proceed because under Robert's Rules of Order, I may. And the bylaws specify that when the University Assembly has referred a motion to you, then what you proceed to say takes control. To the best of my knowledge, the University Assembly has not passed a motion referring this to you. If you know of a motion, please let me know and correct me, and I will stand corrected.
I think that the fundamental question is who owns, which of our committees owns the Campus Code of Conduct, which Resolution 2 points to as a reaffirmation that the CJC, as Richard was discussing, is the committee that owns the code, first and foremost, before providing recommendations to the UA. And whether or not that, like, that fundamentally needs to happen is pretty plain reading. And so a discussion on two informs one, but any, I think, is just a very clear statement that the campus code of conduct and all the documents that relate to the campus code of conduct are always maintained first by the CJC and then passed to the UA through a consent model of the CJC voting that. And I think that's, it's a fundamental issue. And then, like, after that, that makes sense.
Gavin has one.
Gavin.
Richard.
So it's an odd thing, Bob, to insist that, you know, we haven't, that the CJC hasn't been, had this matter referred to them. I mean, it's, you've involved Logan in these discussions with the central administration. The council draft has been given to the committee. It may be true that formally this time, this year, we have not referred the matter to the CJC. But good heavens, it's been there. This is my third year. It's always been on tap in the committee. I don't see the purpose in complicating what is a lot of work. And the idea that somehow there would be dabbling from the outside by this body before, you know, without knowing what the discussions are in the CJC. Boy, I don't want to undercut the CJC and its motives and its willingness and its desire to deliberate on these things.
Yeah.
I think what you're doing is really undercutting the committee. I don't understand why.
It's not
what the purpose is.
It's not my job. Go.
I believe that the committee has deference. So at the end of the day, if the committee and the committee chair's obligation to the assembly is to produce a draft, one, but two, during meetings we update you on what we're working on. And if we choose to, then we can ask for input. But up until that point, which I'm sure we will do, but up until that point, I don't think that this is a discussion for the entire university assembly. I also think that it's important to recognize that we are under a deadline. So.
Logan and then Chris.
Logan.
Yeah, so I just want to say we're also moving into territory of the next resolution without fully just addressing this one. The CJC is just trying to adhere to procedure. I was elected by this body with the understanding that I was chairing the CJC to work on the code revisions, and we're really just working within the charter of the UA and the bylaws, and we don't understand where the conflict is coming from. We're completely transparent. Our meetings are all open. We are happy to have any single member of the UA come to every one of our meetings and to participate as a speaker. I give speaking privileges not just to ex officio members, but also just to members of the community. So the issue here is just, this is a question about jurisdiction, and our resolutions are, you know, pretty clear with just saying that the charter and the bylaws are giving us jurisdiction, and we just want the freedom to give the product that we're promising you that we're going to give you.
Chris, I wanted to.
Chris.
So to be clear, we are discussing, or on the floor is a debate of a resolution that is titled Unauthorized Online Publication of Campus Code Conduct Working Drafts. Is that correct?
Yeah. I believe so.
Okay. I'm not sure that this is a suitable use of a resolution. The target audience of a resolution is to go to the administration and have them weigh in one way or another about what the situation is. And understanding that in the beginning of this year, we talked about how the UA was going to work differently. We changed the way our meetings worked. We put up a website. There was a lot of pressure from different places, where maybe everybody got put in a reactive way, and things possibly, I'm not clear on the timeline, but possibly things got posted, or, you know, I did hear Logan say, I do not want this posted, and then magically it got posted. And I can totally understand from the CJC that there is a feeling of a threat that, like, if you are a new chair and you're trying to get something done and someone decides to do something that you just said no to, it does not feel good, it does not inspire morale, it is not good for anybody. However, the reason I wanted this to go into an executive session is this is functionally dirty laundry,
And this is an internal discussion about how we are doing things and that the fact that we had a misstep and a miscommunication. And I totally, as a fellow chair, I respect the fact that it would be hard to do this under duress. However, if this is something that like the UA is going to need to vote on, and it's going to have to go to the president where we say, hey, we didn't really talk very well with each other, we made some mistakes, things went out the door, and I feel like this is a matter that we could have handled internally without getting. I understand why a resolution, because of that feeling that the CJC has been put in a place where they have to be on the fence to the beginning. I was at the first CJC meeting to see how it went, and I would not recommend, I don't know the rules as good as you guys, but I would like table, suspend, or I think the merits in discussing why this did not work out so well is really good and how we can move together forward. If we do pass this, it goes public, and then it gets to places that we are going to be unprepared for when they say, hey, look, the UA's credibility is now taken down a peg because they look like they can't figure out how to post stuff on a website correctly. And that damages our credibility, it damages the way that we have jurisdiction to work with everybody around campus, and that was really why I wanted to talk about this without having to talk about it.
Charlie.
I apologize for causing angst. I'm really coming from a very simple point of view. So first of all, I think the starting point is we should never use the word own. I mean, when you say, like, several of you use the word own, that this committee owns that, this committee, it's own. And the second one that you're aware has this, I mean, resolution two, it's a community thing. We're responsible for it. We don't own it. Right? We're responsible for it. And whenever we're all researchers and teachers and learners, whenever you have a hard problem, the first thing you want to do is admit that you don't have all the answers, and you want as many people as possible looking over your shoulder. It's not a threat, it doesn't undermine, it's just a desire to get the best possible product as quick as possible. So for me, putting something online is sort of a nothing thing. This is a practical thing, but I would guess that most two people have looked at that outside of this room. All right, so we're arguing about something that the public comment. No one is looking at this. I can tell you that right now. It was just a way of learning. Yes, the messy draft produced last year, you know, there are little parts in that are really interesting and educational. And when we show up here to talk about a specific topic, I'd like that to be out there to point to and say, hey, look at that. So I guess I sort of feel that we're really hung up on this ownership thing. I think Mr. Battaglia didn't do his job at the end because he felt the CJC and the UA owned the code, right? And he wouldn't want anything to do with the university council doing it. Bob had to, Madeline, I guess for a brief moment, felt, hey, we own this draft and whatever. But Bob said, no, let's share it. Yeah. And you wouldn't be where you are today, and I'm really glad there's progress. You wouldn't be here today talking about, hey, forward motion, unless Madeline was willing to share that code broadly. And so I also say, by analogy, I don't see these things as undercutting the CJC. You have more time, the expertise to look at this. And again, there's such an absence of people saying, hey, what do you think about this? Without fanfare, without Robert's rules, just what do you think about this? It's such a simple question. It's at the heart of why we're in university. And there's a total absence about that. So again, to sum up, I think we're too hung up on jurisdiction and ownership. I think we should just be more forthcoming and sharing. It's a joint thing. No one owns this thing. All the constituencies own it. So I think we're just
Logan and then
arguing Richard about process at the expense of really making forward motion.
Logan?
Yes, I think there's a big misunderstanding as to why these resolutions were brought, and I completely understand your point, Chris, and I don't view this as a personal attack against myself. Both of these are from the CJC, and I am here speaking at this moment on behalf of the CJC. We believe in following procedure and in jurisdiction. We do not own a code, but it is within our jurisdiction to be working on those code revisions to provide the recommendations. told to me, I don't know whether it was by the president's office or by Bob, but it would be me that was speaking with Martha and the U Council's office, but it is Bob giving all of the information to the University Assembly and failing to give that information to the CJC. I had to forward it to them today. So there's just a massive lack of communication that we're trying to avoid, and this is just the CJC pretty much saying nicely, please just let us do our job, let us follow procedure. That's what we're doing. We're making great progress. If this body agrees to remove the documents online and also to let us do our job, I do not see why we could not, we have to pass these resolutions. But until we have these discussions about jurisdiction and the CJC is its own working group under the UA, and we're following procedure, unfortunately, this is the way that we felt like we had to do it, and it's not the way that we wanted to do it. But I asked for those not to be made public. The CJC hadn't even met yet, and they were made public anyway. And the CJC voted, and they don't want them public. Those aren't our words. Those are the U Council's words. We want a public document that our committee has voted on, and that's ready for the viewing of everyone, and we believe is representative of the work product. This publication is enforcing or just saying that the UA supports that right off the bat, without a paragraph saying that this is the U Council's proposed language, the CJC is going to consider it, along with everything else, because I'm writing down everything everyone says here, and that's going to the CJC. We're transparent. We're working. You're all free to come to our meetings, but being delegated what we should be working on by the UA is not what the committee is meant to be doing, and it actually only hinders our progress at the end of the day.
If I may just interject, my interest totally is in having the University Assembly and all of its committees work as effectively as possible. I'm coming at it from having watched failures over several years, really bad failures, and I had thought we were in agreement as a group to try something different. Given the timeline, I thought we were in agreement that the CJC and the UA as a community would work in tandem on this. You, Logan, and I have many conversations to that effect. We discussed that at the last UA meeting. I sent out an email over the summer to which no one objected. So it is in that context that I thought it was best that when we got the University Council's report that we posted to the website. I asked Charlie to do so. He did so. I actually did that before I heard of your objections. I didn't think it was necessary, quite frankly, to have the CJC agree to that because it's not a CJC document. It's from the University Council's office. And the reason for doing that was to facilitate communication, not to tie your hands or do anything of the sort. You also alluded to the fact that I seem to be the person communicating with the university as a whole at the moment. I will point out that the University Assembly has bylaws, which we can change at any time by majority vote, and we have a charter, which is approved by the trustees of the university. And under the charter, I, as chair, am the sole spokesperson to interface with the university on all issues under our jurisdiction, including those of committees. So it actually is appropriate for me to do that. Richard.
Yeah, so I agree with everything that Chris said. I mean, I regret that we had to bring it forward. I agree with many things that Charlie said. I do believe an open process that recognizes responsibility is the way to go, and it shouldn't be overburdened with procedure and so forth. The problem here is that there was an action taken in posting these documents. And that action, that's a real thing. It's not something we can say, it's sort of okay. It was taken. It was taken, they weren't taken down after Logan objected. We didn't vote to have those documents posted. You know, it wasn't our decision as a UA. It wasn't our decision as a CJC. It was not, you know, it was just done. And so in that sense, you know, what we're trying to do is just back up and keep things straight so that we can figure this out. You can destroy a committee if there's an authoritarian relationship with the chair of the parent body. You can destroy it. You can destroy morale. People will just say, you know, why do this? We need to protect that.
And then Logan, you're coming after. So I'm quite new to the UA. I'm coming in with clearly issues that were closing up towards the end. I saw it in the first meeting when I was nominated, and it was quite clear there were problems right then and there with the code. I believe it was then the intention, as we were elected to the executive committee, as we went through the summer with the communications, that we were going to be doing things differently, and that we asked for that communication to be open and honest, including the fact that we were going to move forward with the trial project of what Charlie has been kind enough to have in an open platform. And in that platform, we were going to put all our discussions that included any material that we were going to be bringing forth through emails, communications, our executive sessions. We were going to put things there. That never was the intention that we were going to ask for every vote, for everything that we were going to send to Charlie. We wanted all the material that we were discussing at our meetings, whether it was executive or here, it would be in that forum to try to capture the same way that we do through Box, that we would do it through what Charlie had. Therefore, whether it was miscommunication, there was never in our thought process, whether at the exec or with just, you know, with Bob and Charlie, that we would put to a vote a document that was shared by counsel's office. It was shared with good intentions, and it was shared not as a resolution, not drafted by us, not vetted by us, not voted by us. It was just a document to be shared that we wanted at an open platform, which we did. Now, you all felt that that action should be voted on, then we need to clarify as to how many times I will need to come to you all, or we will need to come to you all on a vote as to what we put in Box or what we put with Charlie. Because that's what I'm hearing in is the fact that, and if you look at Charlie's page, it is quite clearly saying revision of the campus code of conduct, and it clearly states that it is by counsel's office. It is not by the university assembly. It is not drafted by us. It is there as a just a general information document. Logan, I believe you wanted after.
Yes.
I'm going to yell to Richard.
Okay, Richard.
Well, Jeff, actually, okay.
Well, she's Jill, Richard, yep, then Jeff.
Well, it sounds like we set up a bad process. And my feeling is that, you know, routinely, when you have documents, there's no way anyone could ever have conceived of these documents as being just neutral. We've been through this. The code has been discussed here, and and there are many strong opinions and strong feelings about it, and so forth and so on. So, not to consult with the committee, you know, before doing that. That's a bad process. And then once you knew that the chair objected, then they should have been taken down. And now that you know that the committee as a whole, I think it's unanimous, wants them taken down, just take them down. I mean, this isn't rocket science. I mean, if the process you're talking about is that open ended, then let us participate in it in a way that shapes it. I mean, the reason this resolution had to come forward is because when we did this, you know, they weren't coming down. They weren't taken off.
Jeff.
So, kind of hearing everything, I think it's important to recognize that we're not going to make any conclusions during this meeting. And I think there are two camps and two perspectives, and I think that neither of them are per se wrong. Right? One side, because in the grand scheme of things, the idea of the implementation of the system was based upon the deadline, right? The deadline that we would get this draft completed. And I can see from one side the urgency of having all of UA be a part of this process and provide feedback as transparent as possible. On the other side, the fear that whatever product is being provided out of the committee is not what they per se want or think is ready, right? And there's no clear boundary for that. It's very gray. And I think that we need to, as a whole, think carefully about how we implement this new system that we're trying. Because I will say in our previous discussions, we were very excited about this approach of governance, right? The decreased number of meetings and the use of this online system. But clearly there are some flaws that need to be worked out. And I think this was clear as an indication of that.
Yeah.
I don't think it per se tells us that, you know, the document should be organized this way, whatever it might be. It's more so a larger thing that I think all of us can find common ground for, right? Because I think that, you know, the CGC is doing work that they want to be proud of, and that at the same time, we also want to be able to help when we can. And we don't want to step on anybody's feet, but also still provide the opportunity to give input. So I'm just saying that because I'm trying to reflect on everything as a whole, and I don't think anyone's going to win out of this argument. I think that's something we should consider in the future.
But let me just interject. Thank you for that. We have 5 minutes left, and you haven't even introduced your second resolution.
Which I think is probably not going to be introduced today, but I would like to respond to Jeff.
I'm just wanting to get some sense of how we're going to bring closure in the 5 minutes. And I hate, normally I would, it is my wife's birthday, if you'll bear with me on that.
Do you have, Logan, you probably have closing, wrapping
yeah,
up. Let's see.
Yeah. I just want to.
Yeah, so while originally we did talk about working alongside the UA, the CJC, that was before I had met the CJC. And at our first meeting, there was a unanimous vote not to do that. And the vote was that as we have a section that we're proud of, or not even proud of, but that is ready to be viewed, whether that is sent as a couple of pages at a time or you get the whole first draft of the U Council, that is what they voted to do. So it wasn't within my purview to say that the CJC will work with the UA. I said that it was something that we would talk about, and it's something that I thought was a good idea. The committee doesn't want to do that. And I just want to reiterate that all of our meetings are open for the time being, completely open, and you and anyone else can zoom in and see exactly what we're working on, but we do not approve of having any sort of drafts whatsoever related to the code released by the UA without consultation from the CJC or the UA at the end of the day. And I'm just going to close my statement by saying that I understand that as chair, it is your role to represent the entire body, but when you have meetings regarding the code, I really do believe that I should either be included or be given a summary of what's discussed, because that's just opening the same problem as last year, and I just want to...
I have done that in every single case. I brought you in from the start. I've done it every single time. And by the way, this is the first time I heard the unanimous vote of the committee to not work with the UA in this until you have it done. I'm sorry for the poor communication, but it's not just a one-way street, I would say. We have a resolution proposed.
We can... I put a motion that we vote as the UA body to pull down the documentation that's up on the faculty website if it is the motion of the full unanimous CJC committee.
A second.
We've probably had adequate discussion, haven't we? All those in favor of the motion, raise your placards, please. Opposed? Abstain? Motion passes. We have 1 minute to go. I think I will ask.
The thing on the second resolution, that's a relatively non-controversial one. So we can pick that up maybe next time or postpone it indefinitely for now.
Is there a second for that?
Second.
All in favor? Seconds? Opposed? Abstained? Motion to table is carried.
I have a question, though. You didn't vote on the first resolution.
No.
No, we didn't.
I also table to move resolution number one to the next meeting.
Because we voted on the action of the resolution, but we didn't vote.
You'd be postponed.
I would table it
indefinitely. Indefinitely,
Second. All those in favor of indefinite tabling?
Yep.
Opposed? Abstained?
Motion to adjourn.
Motion second. Second.
We are adjourned. Thank you.
Here we go. Oh, well, no. Actually, that is. I don't know. Turn it off for me, buddy.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.